In a lot of ways, what he's describing is how we will be interacting with AIs in the future. It used to be, we would type into a system, create a symbolic system that describes what we want, program it in, and it runs. And then, the last few years has been we're chatting with these systems. You give it a question, it comes back with a response. The agent systems that are coming now essentially allows us to be able to hand off a task to them, and then they go off and do work. And then if you now have a team of them that can talk to each other, and then you have a manager agent that then talks to the team of agents, you essentially have the ability to create a company inside a computer.
Welcome to the Big Bang Tech Report. Today, the next AI war. We will not question who has the smartest chatbot. Let's talk about who wins control. Musk, Meta, OpenClaw, Moltbook, Nvidia, new chips, NemoClaw, and Jensen Huang is calling OpenClaw the operating system for the agentic age. Wow, there's a lot of stuff. So who will control the next layer of work? Alvin Graylin is with us. Alvin, great to have you here.
Yeah, it's good to see you again. A lot has happened in the last 2 weeks since we talked.
Yeah, it's so incredible. So fast start, Alvin. Are we now moving beyond chatbots and into the age of AI systems that will work for us? Let's start with Musk, TerraFab. What is that?
I think one of the big news that happened in the last few days was Musk's announcement that he's making a terawatt chip factory so that he can supply enough chips, because he doesn't think that TSMC and Samsung and all the other companies, Intel, can create enough chips for him, right? I think in some ways, he's probably right in the near term that there is a supply constraint. But I feel like he's overestimating his own ability to deliver these things, because it's essentially taken decades for these companies to be able to create as many products as they have today. And he's essentially trying to create more than the capacity of all of the semiconductor suppliers in the world in the next 2 or 3 years.
What?
Which it's not only is it not feasible, it's in fact that type of a goal and the type of things that he's trying to do is probably going to make it detrimental in terms of his ability to deliver.
But, because yeah. But tell us, what is he really building? A chip empire and an AI empire, or both, or what is it?
Well, he's trying to create an entire vertical stack of every single component of going from materials, silicon to chips, to the tools to make the chips, to the robots that it will go into, to the space systems that will launch it, and then the energy systems in the sky that will bring terawatts of energy, right? So he's essentially trying to create the entire global economy with one company, and supposedly for $25 billion, right? Which the number that he's talking about and the time frame that he's talking about with the scope of what he's creating, there's an impossibility for that to happen. I'm not saying that that's not a good idea longer term, that we expand the capabilities in these areas, but for a company that has never done semiconductors to go into semiconductor, I used to work in a semiconductor company. I know how hard it is.
Yeah.
I know the time frames that they work, because fabs takes 5-6 years to build and get it running, maybe another 1 or 2 years to actually after operating to get it into high yields, right? So for him to say within 3 or 4 years, he's going to exceed the global capacity of the world, and then to be able to send this up into space, he would need thousands, or actually tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Starship flights every year to send this material up. And so far, we've had something like 5 or 6 flights, and half of them have blown up, right? So the reality and what he's proposing there's a very, very big gap.
But it can work if every Tesla can fly in a few years, you know, then it can work.
I think if you look underneath, because he's a smart guy, yeah. And I think he's also done the math and he knows that it's not possible. But the reality of why he's saying these things is actually much simpler. And it's that he has a IPO coming up.
Yeah.
For his SpaceX, and he's now integrated SpaceX with OpenAI, with XAI. So the combination of the two creates a very strong story. And the need to make space data centers creates a reason for there to be thousands and hundreds of thousands of flights for it to happen. So it's a fiction that allows for a valuation to be justified beyond what it probably should and could be, but it's not a reflection of reality.
Okay, that brings us more or less to NVIDIA. At GTC, Jensen pushed new chips, NemoClaw, and a big idea that OpenClaw could become the operating system for the agentic age. What do you think about it?
I mean, I actually admire Jensen in so many ways, and he's very much ahead of the game, and you know, for several different generations of technology. And I think in a lot of ways, what he's describing is how we will be interacting with AIs in the future. It used to be, you know, we would type into a system, you know, create a symbolic system that describes what we want, program it in, and it runs. And then, you know, the last few years has been we're chatting with these systems. And you know, you give it a question, it comes back with a response. The agent systems that are coming now essentially allows us to be able to hand off a task to them, and then they go off and do work. And then if you now have a team of them that can talk to each other, and then you have a manager agent that then talks to the team of agents, you essentially have the ability to create a company inside a computer, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's what he's describing. And I think that actually will be, in a lot of ways, the interface model that we have with AI. So what he's describing, I think it's actually underplays it, because an operating system still means that it's like a Linux or an iOS or a Windows, where you're just using it to get a response and using the tools inside. What I actually think that it's not an operating system for a computer. It's actually an operating system for a digital economy. Mm-hmm. And that digital economy can be very autonomous in terms of how it interacts with each other. And these master agents can actually become the CEOs of their teams of AI. And so you become the shareholder of these teams, of these virtual digital companies.
I was just in Austin and have attended South by South, and there the people talked a lot about OpenClaw, but they were a little bit afraid of it, and they said, okay, we buy a new computer with our own stuff, not with everything, and then we test it on the computer. Why do they do that?
So I think OpenClaw is amazing because it is so open. It allows you to run 24/7. It allows you to do anything that you can do as a human on a computer, and to reach out to any model that you want, right? But by doing that, it also makes it very vulnerable to security issues. So if somebody has access to your full computer and has access to your bank accounts and all your email and your hard drive, they could delete everything. They could send message out to your friends. They could go to your bank and transfer your money.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a lot of risk of doing that. And so some people are essentially creating kind of sandboxed devices that are limited in their capabilities. What's really happening in the last few weeks is that every company now is saying, okay, I recognize this vulnerability, so I'm going to create a defanged version of OpenClaw, which is actually what NemoClaw is, right?
Mm-hmm. What is NemoClaw? So explain it to us.
NVIDIA essentially saying, hey, I'm going to create a mini version of OpenClaw that has its own virtual sandbox, and it's safe in the sense of you have to give it access to different tools, and so now it cannot do the harm that you know, it's less dangerous. It's not saying it's not dangerous, but it's less dangerous than it would if you gave it the full access like the open cloud systems.
Somebody at South by South told me that he is afraid that his computer will call in 5 times and will tell him something what is not all right. So I think they're it's strange.
In fact, some people are using it for this way, right? Yeah. They essentially have it tied to their WhatsApp or Signal or something, Telegram, and have it go do tasks and have it call them through these messaging systems when they finish their task or when they have an update. Mm. So in some ways, you are actually interfacing with it like you are with a friend or a colleague, right? So it's not necessarily a bad thing for your AI to proactively call you, because what that does is it means you don't have to sit at the screen anymore. You don't have to say, okay, is it running and am I proving every single piece?
So what do you recommend? What shall I do? What shall we do with OpenClaw? Shall we use NemoClaw, or what is your advice? Or shall we wait?
I mean, so I actually ran OpenClaw for about a week or so, and it was a lot of work to set up and a lot of work to maintain. Yeah. And what I'm finding right now, for me personally, I can do everything that I was doing on OpenClaw using Claude Code, and using the systems that is provided. And it's much safer. It's a tool that I already have, and I already have it, give it access to certain folders on my computer. And with the new tools and the dispatch capability, I can actually also have it message me mobily using my local computer. So it's already doing a lot of the things. I don't know if everybody needs to go and spend a day or two to set up at OpenClaw.
One or two days.
Okay. Yeah. I think if you to do it right and with the current systems out there, it is not designed for the average user, right? Okay. And this is why I think we talked about a few weeks ago or a couple weeks ago in China, people were lining up to have engineers set up. They had these elderly grannies and grandpas lining up to get OpenClaw because they were told that this is going to make them thousands of dollars a week. Yeah. And and what's actually happening right now is that a lot of these people that got them set up are now going back and saying, can you uninstall it for me? Because I don't know, it's taking too many tokens, it's costing me tens of dollars a day of tokens.
Maybe later on, it is much more easier. Is it right now a real turning point to a new future, this new systems? Action fused system.
I think it is, actually. I think that the usage metaphor of... in the past of us having a real-time interaction with AI and using typing and words by themselves, text, as the interface, that is about to change to make it much more conversational and much more asynchronous and much more task-based instead of information-based. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, I would recommend all of the audience to go and actually experiment with it and understand it, because then you will know kind of how the interaction models are going to change over time, and your relationship with computers and your relationship with cognitive work is going to change. So essentially, if you can start thinking about these agents as either an intern or a junior staff, and how you would interact with it. That's how these systems are working.
And then there is somebody or something else is showing up, Moldbook. We have to add to the picture. And what do you think about Moldbook?
I mean, and the news with Moldbook recently was that it was acquired by Facebook, right? Or by Meta. Honestly, I mean, Moldbook was something that was vibe coded in a day, right? when people went back and looked, even though they said there was a million agents on there, what it looked like there was at the end when people did the real digging is that there was probably about 1,500 independent machines accounts from different people that were running on it. And a lot of the conversations that were very hyped up were actually orchestrated by humans to create PR. So I think whatever large high price that Zuckerberg paid for it, it was probably overpriced. But it's an interesting concept, because I think in time, agent to agent communication is going to be a thing. Mm-hmm. It will happen, but it doesn't necessarily need this type of social network model for communication. That's something I think the community that reads too much sci-fi right now is climbing on top of, because it really gives a sense that these AIs have right now existing consciousness, and they are their own ascension beings, and they have their own will. I'm not saying that won't happen, and I'm not saying it's not possible theoretically, but it feels like a lot of that is us imposing or some people imposing their philosophies on top of what's happening. And some of it is also humans injecting information to give the perception of that happening.
So with the new players, with the new AI agents, we see a change in real work. We see change at the work desk, email, research, scheduling, presentations, coding. Where will people feel it first?
One of the things that we had talked about in our exchanges on WhatsApp is that Zuckerberg just announced that he's now has his own sense of chief of staff is now an AI agent, and he's now making every one of his team members do the same. And so they now have this collective system for using AI agents to manage their organizations and creating a much thinner organization. So there's almost no middle management. Right. And I think that they are definitely ahead of the game there. And, you know, having worked in very large organizations, there definitely is a lot of bureaucracy and inefficiencies that come from multiple layers of management. And also the fact that a CEO is, you know, they say CEO is the last to know anything because all the people underneath are filtering out what they want to hear instead of what they need to hear. And so I feel like the approach that he's taking makes a lot of sense. And organizations that does adopt that type of a model will probably see significant transparency and efficiency gains. What it also does is that it essentially adds a level of full surveillance over all of your employees, right? Because anything can now be searchable. Anything can now be auditable. And if you say, okay, well, you know, how much time did Jens work on this project? And did he do it himself or did he just ask the AI to do it? Yeah. Okay, well, it looks like 99% was done by AI. Maybe I don't need Jens anymore, right? And so this is the kind of things that could be happening. And managers that are very profit-driven or profit-focused will start using that type of a model for using the new information that they're gaining. Which I think may actually create decisions that are more extreme than they need to be and faster than they need to be.
In South by South, there was people were asked if they would prefer a human being or an AI as a supervisor. And what do you think? What was the answer, more or less, or mostly?
I mean, I would expect that South by Southwest is much more of a kind of creative and arts and human-centric. I would think that they would want a human.
No, it was the opposite because an agent is fair. He has no bad mood. He is reliable. And so the people think it could be good to have a machine as the boss because of transparency and all the stuff, you know?
Yeah, and I think a lot of what you say actually does make sense. In fact, I have a new essay coming out soon on AI and leadership. And I actually also advocate for more usage of AI in helping you make more rational decisions. But to have it completely be offloaded where humans are now reporting to AI, we may not be ready for that yet. Because the problem is not the AI. The problem is the person on top of the AI. Right. And so if I had Zuckerberg running an AI that was managing me, I would be very worried because the intent of the person on top is going to be reflected through the AI systems a lot more. If the AI was actually had a objective function to say, make my organization flourish, help make people stronger, help develop them into more capable employees and professionals, that's great. If the objective function is find the maximum efficiency in my organization, tell me anybody that's not working 100% or 110% and then notify me so I can have them be laid off, then it's going to create a very different organization. And the pressure of that second type of a scenario is going to create a fear-based management system.
But do you think we will use to it in a few years that is pretty normal to have an AI as a supervisor, as a manager?
I think that AI being implemented in the management process will become a natural thing because of the efficiency gains that we just talked about and because of the ability to monitor efficiency of employees more than you've ever been able to. So I feel like it's going to be good for efficiency near term. it may be a real issue for societal harmony and also for the stress levels of employees long term.
Yeah.
And so this is why I feel like, we talked about this before, that there is going to be an accelerating job displacement problem.
Yeah.
And that these type of management models is going to bring about that acceleration, because the transparency of innate inefficiencies, right? Humans have, biologically probably 2 or 3 hours of a day of clear attention span where we can work on something. But if the system's monitoring you, saying, okay, there was 5 minutes where he didn't do this and 10 minutes where, and added together, he had, out of this 8 hours in the office, he only had, 6.5 hours of productive work. You should reduce his pay by, 70%, right? These are the kind of things that an AI might tell a manager, but it's probably not necessarily long-term beneficial, because a lot of the productivity that happens inside humans is things that when you're in a peaceful off time, your creativity, your creative mind can happen. Mm-hmm. But if you're always working to try to, make the next widget and move the next thing faster and keep typing on your keyboard so that it looks like you're working, you're not going to be creative and doing your best work.
Yeah. There was a common sense in Austin and Texas that we need people who question the AI, who ask the AI if it is true and that this is a good story or message for people older than 40 years, because they used to know, they know more about life, about our circumstances and so on, and that they will be used, that they will be very important for the economy. It's not so good for young people, but good for people older than 40 years. And do you agree with that?
I think there is always value for life experience, because, even though young people are going to be better at using these tools and they're going to have skills that the older generations doesn't have, but they are always asking the question how and how to make it faster. But the older generation will say why and should we be doing these things? And in a lot of ways, where now the how becomes very automatic, because the AI will have read every single manual and know it better than anyone how to do it. The real question is why and should we be doing it? And you see that recently with like the Iranian war, mm-hmm. where AI is now being put into the targeting system and then analytical systems. And, the news just came out that, on the first day, 1,000 different targets were given to the military on what should be, where the missile should go.
Yeah.
And, it's going to give you, fairly accurate targets, but it also, because of the volume of targeting that's happening, it's impossible for you to verify. Mm-hmm. Right? How can a single person look and say, out of this, multi terabytes of data, this decision came out? So what ends up happening is that you have decision fatigue, and you essentially default to being a rubber stamp for these AI systems. So even if you insert human in the loop in these systems where you have so many decisions to make in a very short time, it essentially becomes whatever is recommended just gets approved. So I feel like we need to step back a little bit and digest this technology before we kind of over rely on it, because it is a very powerful technology, but it is not perfect yet.
But do you see,
like with the school yeah. shoot, the school bombing, right? I mean, the targeting of the missile to the school, that was part of the recommended set of targets.
Mm.
It's unclear why, but I mean, there may be wrong data, there may be misinformation, or it just made a mistake and hallucinated, right?
Yeah.
We don't know.
But we have, in our time, we have the Saturday and Sunday. We have 2 days off normally. And I think something we need too for the AI world. But now it's always accelerating. We can't catch up with all the news and all the things from China, from the US, sometimes from Europe. And what can we do to stop the acceleration?
At the end of the day, I think the biggest leverage point is really government needs to get involved. And unfortunately, the problem is that the government, rather than trying to tell the industry to slow down and do what's within the capability of technology, we're actually saying go faster. Yeah. Right? I don't know if you saw, but just a couple of days ago, the national policy framework for AI came out from the U.S. White House, and it pretty much said we're now going to allow data centers to be built faster. We're going to allow full copyrighted content to be used inside AI training. There's no liability, yeah. And we're going to take away liability from these companies for any wrongdoing, you know. So it's everything that the Silicon Valley lobbyists have been asking for is now being put into regulation. Mm-hmm. Whereas what we should be doing more is thinking about, okay, should we slow down these a little bit? You know, do we need to have another 2,000 data centers in America, which already has 5,000 data mm-hmm. centers? Compared to the rest of the world, which already, you know, it's like 80% of the world's data centers is in America already. Do we need more?
No.
Right? And how should this stuff be applied so that it's actually being used for benefit of people versus just for a few labs to increase their profits? You know, and should we be working together more? I mean, we've talked about mm-hmm. this in the past. And, you know, I think this is where Europe can actually play a bigger role, because Europe in general has had much more of a humanistic perspective in terms of how technology's relationship with people. And if Europe can stand up a little bit and help to think about what are the policies that allows this technology to grow safely, allows this technology to be diffused in a way that does not create a societal chaos. I think those are the kind of things, creating a better social safety net in Europe and maybe also in the rest of the world. Be a beacon of light in right now a very dark world, right? I think there's a role to be played there versus being afraid right now. And I hear a lot of fear to say, oh, you know, Europe is falling behind. We actually need to do what America does. I think that's the wrong narrative, mm-hmm. because America is actually right now is going into a self-defeating, self-harming race, mm-hmm. because all the things that America is doing to try to get ahead will be the exact reasons why it will arrive at a destination before it's ready and create economic and societal chaos in its own society, and maybe also create a AI that is harmful and less safe, which endangers the entire world.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of stuff. But to stand up, we have to be strong. We learn to get stronger right now, but it takes time. We haven't learned it. And I've never thought that I will ask for regulation in my life, because I said regulation is very bad and we can do it by ourselves. But I think I'm wrong with that in the AI field. We need rules. We need something. We need game changers in this. And we need politicians of the politician field who is smart and who overview what's going on, what we can't overview right now, because we do not know exactly what will happen in the next 3 years.
Yeah, and it's actually probably going to be faster, right? Yeah. I don't know if you saw the article I sent about the Minimax 2.7. So that's a new version of the Chinese Minimax model, that they essentially just had to go into a loop of self-improvement. Yeah. And within a few weeks of 2.5 coming out, 2.7 was 30% better than 2.5. And there was nobody that actually went into the code. It was just the AI improving itself, right? And at this type of a rate, if it then sends it out to say, make 2.8, make 2.9, the speed of improvement is going to be exactly what you said earlier, is at a speed that we cannot keep up,
yeah.
Right? So when people go back and I want to emphasize something, yeah. is that when people go back and they always say, oh, but you look at the prior industrial revolution, there was always more jobs created. We always adapted. We are a very adaptable species. That's true when revolutions and industrial revolutions come in decades, right? Mm. And the first, second, and third came in 80, 60, and 40 years of increments to play out. We are now playing out a full industrial revolution in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. No matter how adaptive we are as a species, our society needs time for that to play out into the economy and into our society. And slowing down is actually the smartest thing that we can do.
And I think it's for us, it's nearly late in the afternoon. I need a beer. You need a coffee. You're early in the morning, because after all this stuff, I need something positive. And I think that's beer and sushi for me. And but Alvin, thank you very much. And yeah, we need orientation. We need facts. The facts you are giving to us. And I can only thank you for that. And yeah, let's keep up and let's think what will happen in the future, and let's talk about it.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that we have this ability to converse every 2 weeks and share information to the audience, because I feel like the narrative that we see on you know, mass media is overly framed on how do we go faster, how do we make more profits, whereas really what's needed right now is, you know, what is the real impact of this technology, and how will society adapt to it, and to adapt to it in a non-chaotic way, and, you know, creating greater value to humanity versus creating greater value to a few individuals. I think that's something that we need to elevate in the conversation.
We need a slow down initiative.
Yeah, which is very counter, I know, to, and I'm from the Silicon Valley, so and we're very focused on going faster. Yeah. But this is one of the few times, and I'm a technology optimist.
Yeah.
This is one of the few times in history where I really think that slowing down will actually benefit the world, and even benefit the people who are trying to accelerate, because they think that they're going to make trillions of dollars by making AGI. Mm. But what they don't realize is if we create AGI before the world is ready, we will create a chaos that destroys the economy, and they will actually be harmed as much as everybody.
There's nothing positive, Alvin. Please.
The positive thing, there's one positive thing I want to say, is that we still have time to affect the outcome.
Yeah. That's right. Good.
And so having, you know, more people listen to what we're talking about, having more policymakers start to take action on some of these things and start to create actually some more regulation and policy on safety and on you know, soft landing policies, on international cooperation. If we can start working on these things, we have probably somewhere between a 1 to 2 year window where we still have a chance to change the speed and change the trajectory.
So let's benefit from the 1 to 2 years window. And once again, Alvin, thank you very much. And in 2 weeks, we see us again. And then with a lot of positive news.
Very good. I look forward to it.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
You too.